It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
People come to me at time and they need a settlement agreement. And what I say to my clients is the key word is agreement. If you don't come to a meeting of the minds, you're not going to have an agreement. So... it needs to be fair, and both parties need to feel that the agreement is fair and is something where they each are going away with some assets so they can start over again.
Private attorney Teresa Reinhart explains marital separation and property settlement agreements and when you really need one. And the complexities of collecting child support across state lines are explained during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 138, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Many consumers are unaware of their rights under Virginia's homestead deed statute and the fact that generally they cannot give up or waive these rights. A homestead deed simply is a list, filed with the local circuit court, of property that a debtor could lose to a creditor, which the debtor is protecting simply by filing and recording the deed. The amount is not open-ended and has a lifetime limit of $5,000, or $10,000 for someone 65 years of age or older, plus an additional $500 for each dependent, plus an additional $10,000 for a disabled veteran. The homestead exemption can be applied to any debt except child and spousal support or a debt for the purchase price of property bought on credit. However, creditors such as small loan companies and furniture stores still try to put a waiver clause into a contract or loan under which the debtor gives up or waives the homestead exemption, typically for property such as money in a bank account. Under federal regulation and state law, such a waiver of homestead exemption is completely illegal. If you find such a waiver of homestead exemption in any loan or contract, seek legal help right away. In other news, each year, former spouses pay about $9 billion in spousal support or alimony, with the amounts usually decided by family court judges using a list of factors, including the length of the marriage, the ages and health of the spouses, their financial situations, their earning potential, and their contribution to the marriage, financial and otherwise. But judges must decide how to translate these factors into dollar amounts, resulting in wildly inconsistent awards. Since 2007, Virginia law minimizes this inconsistency by using a mathematical formula to calculate temporary spousal support, while allowing judges to adjust awards up or down under special circumstances. Under the formula, if the parties have minor children in common, spousal support is the difference between 28% of the pay or spouse's monthly income and 58% of the payee's monthly income. If the parties have no minor children in common, spousal support is the difference between 30% of the payor spouse's monthly income and 50% of the payee's monthly income. Using a formula, it's a lot harder for judges to make outlandishly large or small spousal support awards. Virginia could go further and use the formula for all spousal support awards, both temporary and permanent. This would be more predictable, make the judges' jobs a lot easier, and make divorce a lot fairer. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Rader v. Montgomery County Department of Social Services. On July 5, 1984, the Montgomery County Department of Social Services, or DSS, petitioned for custody of three children of Sherry Rader by a prior marriage. The Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court granted custody of the three children to DSS. In addition, the Juvenile Court granted custody of two children of Mr. and Mrs. Rader to DSS for foster care placement, even though no petition had been filed. A year later, DSS filed a petition to terminate the parental rights of Mr. and Mrs. Rader to their children, which both the juvenile court and the circuit court granted. However, the Court of Appeals of Virginia reversed. Without a custody petition, the juvenile court did not have jurisdiction originally to place the two children in foster care, and the placement was not valid, and neither court had jurisdiction to terminate parental rights. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Rader v. Montgomery County Department of Social Services is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
It's time for this week's question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Dan from Midlothian.
Welcome to the show, Dan. What question do we have this week?
A child support question. My son's mother lives in Washington State and has come to Virginia recently, and I served her with child support papers, and she has gone back to Washington State in hopes to escape the Child Support Act and does not want to pay, and I cannot get the court to go after her for the child support or to garnish her for the child support. They said basically she has to come back into town. And I want to know how I can go about trying to get child support if she's not here.
Has child support ever been ordered by any court anywhere before?
No. He was born in Seattle, Washington. And the actual custody hearing was in Washington State, which I was awarded full custody, and she was only awarded supervised visits through a guardian ad litem, and I moved to Virginia, and I've been here probably 10 years.
Okay, so her only connection to Virginia is that she happened to come here and was served with the papers?
Yes.
That tells me a lot. That tells me that probably you need to pursue child support through the state of Washington rather than through the state of Virginia, because the law on child support is pretty clear that the court has to have jurisdiction, power, or authority over the person responsible for the child support in order for the court to enter any type of an order. And really, your wife has no connection to Virginia. She didn't live here. The child wasn't born and raised here. You didn't live together as husband and wife here. You're the one who moved here to Virginia. She has no connection to Virginia. She's in Washington State. And so under the normal rules of jurisdiction, the child support has to be established where she is, not where you and the child are. Now, there's two ways to do that. One is long and hard and difficult, which requires you to go to Washington State and file in Washington State the same type of petition that you filed here. The second is also long. It's just not as hard and difficult. You file a petition for child support under UWIFSA, the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. The petition is started here. It is then transferred to Washington State, filed in Washington State, served on your wife in Washington State. You provide your testimony basically by written answers to written questions, which are taken here in Virginia, transferred to Washington, and used as evidence there. So I would urge you to pursue an action under UWIFSA, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, and you could get information about that from the Court Services Unit where you filed your original petition.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. We're here at the law office of Teresa Reinhart at the Courthouse Commons across Parham Road from the Henrico County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, and we are going to be talking today about marital separation and property settlement agreements. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Welcome to you.
Would you tell our audience, please, what is a marital separation and property settlement agreement anyway?
A settlement agreement can take a number of forms. You can have a verbal agreement with your spouse regarding custody, visitation, child support, division of property. It can be addressed real estate, retirements, disposition of debts. So you may have a verbal agreement about what is going to happen in regard to those issues. However, it really needs to be set forth in writing for a court to be able to enforce it.
Now, is it possible to get a divorce in Virginia without having put a settlement agreement in writing?
Yes, it is. It's possible to do that. And frequently, if you have couples that do not have children, do not have property issues, do not have any debt issues that they need to address, then there may be no reason for them to have a settlement agreement.
But in most cases, would you say that a settlement agreement is important? And if so, why?
I think a settlement agreement is important, number one, for peace of mind. If you and your spouse are able to come to an agreement that resolves issues such as custody, child support, your property issues, then you can have peace of mind that that agreement will be enforced by the court in most cases. If you have an agreement regarding the sale of your house, your interest in various accounts, your interest in another person's retirement, then you can be secure this is what the court is going to follow. Agreements in regard to children, child support, visitation, a court normally will follow the party's separation agreement. However, a court's not required to if it's not in the best interest of the child.
Now, if a marital separation and property settlement agreement is reached, is this something that has to be filed with the court along with the divorce?
It actually gets filed at the time of the preparation and presentation of the final decree to the court. And you are asking the court to enforce, ratify, and incorporate that agreement into the final decree of divorce.
So in other words, it's as if the court has made that an order, except that the parties have basically made this agreement and they submit it to the court and say, make this an order.
Exactly. The final decree references the settlement agreement, and by reference of the settlement agreement in the final decree of divorce, it actually makes it an order of the court.
So let's talk about the issues that would be dealt with in a marital separation and property settlement agreement. Let's start, I guess, first with the money issues that don't involve support and maintenance, things like real property or personal property or division of debts. How are those handled in a separation agreement?
It really depends on the couples and what they want to do. I think generally when the couples are on equal footing, they are trying to do an equal division of the assets. People come to me at time and they say, I need a settlement agreement. And what I say to my clients is the key word is agreement. If you don't come to a meeting of the minds, you're not going to have an agreement. So it needs to be fair, and both parties need to feel that the agreement is fair and is something where they each are going away with some assets so they can start over again.
And what happens to those assets? Let's say the couple is buying a home together or a car together. And what happens if they don't have an agreement, but one of, or the other of them just plunges ahead and gets a divorce based on some ground or maybe an uncontested no-fault divorce? What happens to those assets?
Well, there's a big risk with real property. Because when you're married, your ownership is a legal term called tenants by the entirety. And what that means, it's just like you own it like a big ball of wax, or if you could conceive of it, it's together. But when you are divorced, you're not related to the person you're divorced to. And then your ownership by operation of law with real property becomes tenants by the common. And there's a risk with that because if your ex-spouse gets a lien or some kind of judgment or debt, it can attach to the whole interest. So it can affect your interest in the real property.
So as I understand, if property is held by tenants by the entireties, then it's basically more protected from creditors than if it's held by tenants in common?
Correct. If it is a creditor against just one of the spouses, now if it's a creditor against both of the spouses, of course it wouldn't be protected. But if it's against one spouse, that lien or judgment or debt, the other spouse can be protected in their interest in the real property.
How do you deal with the money issues, let's just child support and spousal support? Do you deal with one first and then the other, or do you deal with both at the same time?
Well, I think most people now know that there are child support guidelines, and I find that people are a little bit more educated that when they separate, somebody's got to pay support for the children, and that there are guidelines that are set by the state of Virginia, and it's based on the incomes of the parties, the health insurance paid for the child or children, and the daycare costs. So the guidelines are pretty clear. Now, there are spousal support guidelines for the juvenile court. When you have guidelines, I find it's easier then to present it in a way that people can come to an agreement because it's something that's in black and white.
And those spousal support guidelines, they're fairly new, aren't they?
The spousal support guidelines are very new, yes.
And how do you find them working out? I mean, the child support guidelines seem to really clarify things, and as you pointed out, there are numbers that both of the lawyers can present to their clients and say, this is what the law requires. Do you find the same thing for spousal support?
Somewhat, and I think that can help parties to reach agreement. The controlling factor is still the ability of one party to pay, the needs of the other party, the lifestyle established during the marriage. So there's still other factors that should be addressed, but the guidelines do help you as far as getting people to come to an agreement.
And then finally, there's the toughest nut of all to crack, probably, which is the issues of child custody and visitation. How do you deal with them in a marital separation and property settlement agreement?
And getting people to come to an agreement, it's very difficult, but I think what makes it a bit easier is to try to explain it in terms of what have you done historically? What did you do during the marriage? Who was the primary caretaker of the children? Who was the one taking them to school, picking them up after school, doctor's appointments? Now, if you have two parents that were equally involved, it makes it an easier sell to the parties to say, well, you should share custody because that's how you've done it historically in your marriage. If you have a marriage where the mother has been the one stay at home raising the children and the father's the breadwinner, that model, then I think it's easier to say, well, the mother maybe should have the primary care of the children because that's what the children have traditionally done with that parent and what they're comfortable with. And I think also, if you can really focus the parents, which is sometimes difficult, but if you can focus them on what is in the best interest of your children, what is going to cause them the least amount of grief and turmoil and stress during your separation. And if you can get the parents to focus on that, I think that helps them come to an agreement.
Because after all, that's what the court is focused on.
That is what the court is going to be focused on, what is in the best interest of the children.
Now, will a court review the fairness of a marital separation and property settlement agreement, or they'll just accept it as is?
If there is an agreement that is signed by the parties and it's submitted to the court, I don't think a court is going to go behind the parties' agreement unless somebody brings it up. So if you present an agreement, it could be terribly unfair, but unless somebody's complaining, I think the court's going to enforce it. This happens frequently. Somebody will sign an agreement, and even though the agreement itself will say, this agreement was not signed under duress, maybe in the background the other spouse is saying, well, I have these pictures of you, and if you don't sign this agreement, I'm going to, you know, show these to our children, or something like that. And then somebody may sign something is not fair to them, and then later they may try to fight it. I've had that happen several times.
Do you find those challenges can be successful, or do you find the judges basically saying, signing something in Virginia means three things? It means you read it, it means you understood it, it means you agreed with it.
It depends on the circumstances. There was a case, I believe, in Hanover, I don't know how long ago this was, where the spouse had an eighth grade education. She had not worked through the whole marriage and basically signed away everything, the house, the retirements, any kind of spousal support. And even though the agreement on the face of it said that she had read it and understood it, the case, I believe, did go to the Court of Appeals, and it was found that it was not a valid agreement.
I think I recall that case a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was a couple years ago. But I think that's an anomaly. I think if you sign an agreement, I think that case was definitely unusual. I think most agreements are going to be enforced. And I tell my clients that, you know, this is something that's pretty much set in stone as far as your real estate, your personal property, your assets. It's not set in stone, of course, as far as custody, visitation, child support. Those issues can always change.
We have been talking with Teresa Reinhart. She is a private attorney in the Courthouse Commons across Parham Road from the Henrico County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. Thank you so much for being on the show.
And thank you for having me.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 25.1, which deals with eminent domain. Eminent domain is the taking of private property for public use, and the property owner must be paid a just compensation. However, under Code of Virginia Section 25.1-238, once there's been a trial to determine just compensation and the money has been paid into court, the petitioning party may enter the property and start construction or improvements, despite the pendency of proceedings or any objection to the amount compensation or any new trial or any appeal. And no court can issue an injunction to stop the construction once compensation has been determined and been paid into court. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The types of adoption and assisted reproductive techniques and the laws governing each type can be very confusing for all concerned. Join us next week when private attorney Colleen Quinn talks about adoption and surrogacy and the laws governing how new families are built. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.